The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
When I started dealing, the pay was $14.40 a day. That was
a day,
minimum.
Not an hour.
A day. and the tips at the first place I dealt in were $3 to $5 a day. And then I moved to the Four Queens from the Carousel, also downtown, and the salary went to $25 a day and tips of about $30 a day. That was a big
So the tips were more than 100% of your daily rate.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they're the bigger gamblers.
And then as time went on and I got more proficient and mechanically adept and I looked like a strip dealer,
right,
I could go into the Sands and the Desert Inn and Caesars and take a shot. And you know, the term juice means you know someone, you've got juice.
Sure.
You can walk in and get a job. I didn't have any juice. I was out of the military.
Right.
But luckily, time came where a guy that knew an uncle of mine bought the Tropicana real estate. So I went into the Tropicana, asked for Fred Domeini on the old style paging phones, and the operator would call. You don't even hear that anymore.
No, in the hall, right. And down in the main lobby, there'd be paging phones. I don't have that anymore.
My book, Tenacity, describes the whole starting out in business in dealing, which was a business. You're in business for yourself. If you have a personality, you're making better tips. And that's your quality of life. It's how I ended up asking the girl I was dating to marry me. We ended up having three children. We bought new cars when we could. I had car payments. I ended up having a house payment. And the dealing job paid all those bills. But there was nothing extra.
Right.
And I wanted more out of life.
Right.
Which I think goes to that entrepreneurial spirit.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work. And they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hi, I'm Ron Corey, speaking to you from Las Vegas, my hometown since leaving Brooklyn, New York in 1972. I have been an entrepreneur in Las Vegas since getting out of the Marine Corps in 1973. I've recently written a book entitled Tenacity, available on Amazon and through my website, roncoryauthor.com, spelled C-O-U-R-Y. The book talks about me starting 20 different businesses over 40 years, most of the time starting them up without having any pocket money. And it describes some of the challenges I encountered with governmental corruption, police corruption, and the typical adversarial situations one encounters when starting a new business.
All right, Ron. So thanks for coming on the podcast and for, I guess it was, you said it was Oscar Hamilton for connecting us.
Yeah, a gal named Christina DeSala is my
right. Court. Yeah, she sent me a bunch of different guests. But I think your story is a unique one and a very interesting story, and I want to share it with people. And then we'll talk about your book and get into some of the businesses that you've been involved with and why, you know, kind of where the whole evolution of the book and tenacity and that kind of developed from your experiences, I'm sure, both in the military and out of the military. You'll share that with me in a moment. But I think, and I mentioned to you this off mic, I think tenacity is a really good word that is not being talked about a lot. You know, there is resiliency is being talked about a lot, but a lot of it is definitely to be tenacious and to be perseverant and to keep, you know, going forward, because we're all going to face challenges. I mean, that's like the sign of life. Like everyone has problems. They're all different, right? Whenever you think that you're having trouble, you're struggling, you're going through a tough time, then you find out your best friend had the same thing he didn't tell you about or she didn't tell you about. And you find out all these other people that are sharing stories with you, because it's the sign of life, right? Problems and issues and surmountable challenges is just the reflection of living and things going on. So, but maybe we can go back. Let's go back to your background, where you grew up and then your time in the military, and take us through that into the whole tenacity thing. And we'll share some stories about businesses that you've started for the listeners. Does that all make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay. So you're on, Ron. Let's hear your story.
All right. Well, at the age of 19, I enlisted in the Marine Corps while living in Brooklyn, New York. It was during the time of the Vietnam era. So I initially had orders to go to Vietnam after boot camp. However, during the end of my boot camp training period, President Nixon at the time announced something called de-escalation. No more troops were going to go to Vietnam, and so many thousand a month would be pulled out. That ended up being quite an opportunity for me, because I was stationed in Camp Pendleton, California, and then Barstow, California, which exposed me to this small upcoming town called Las Vegas. Uh-huh. In 1972, Las Vegas was a tiny town on the roadside of an interstate connecting to Los Angeles and San Diego.
Small casinos, right? It wasn't like the megatropolis adult Disneyland that it is today. I mean, it's crazy now.
Casinos were 2 and 3 story motel styled hotels.
Right.
And I found Las Vegas to be an excellent opportunity. I had an entrepreneurial spirit. I knew that one day I wanted to get in business for myself. But as you might imagine, when you get out of the military, your mustering out money is usually $300 to $500, enough to buy a plane ticket to get you home.
Right.
And that's it.
That's it.
You're living month to month on $400 a month, buying a couple of beers at the Enlisted Man's Club, and just getting through the month.
Right.
So I came to Las Vegas, became a casino dealer, which was something I thought I might be good at because I was ambidextrous. I was good with numbers, and learning how to deal blackjack just was a no-brainer for me. I got an opportunity to get a break-in job in downtown Las Vegas, also known as Fremont Street.
Okay.
And that's where you do your grooming. You get your mechanical skills down. And when you're good enough, you can try to get a job on the Las Vegas Strip, where the salary and the tips were better.
So those were the bigger casinos, like not off the main strip. So when you were dealing, what were you dealing? Like you were like the dealer behind a table for cards or craps or whatever?
I dealt blackjack, roulette. At the time, mini baccarat first came out, and craps. I learned all the games.
Yeah.
My theory was I wanted to enhance my value to a casino, because back in the early 70s, guys would get let go because the shift boss had a brother-in-law he had to put to work.
Right.
So if I learned more than one game, which many dealers only dealt blackjack or craps, my value to the casino would be enhanced, and I felt I'd have job security.
Sure, because if they needed somebody on another table – and the guy said, well, I only do blackjack, then you're stuck. But if you knew these different games.
Right. And they would send me to roulette. They would send me to dice. And I was versatile in that way, which gave me some added value and ensured job security. That was my only goal.
And is that mostly a tips business? Like, I mean, that's really where you're making your money on tips or no?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
When I started dealing, the pay was $14.40 a day. That was minimum.
Not an hour. Yeah.
a day. and the tips at the first place I dealt in were $3 to $5 a day. And then I moved to the Four Queens from the Carousel, also downtown, and the salary went to $25 a day and tips of about $30 a day. That was a big
boom. So the tips were more than 100% of your daily rate.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they're the bigger gamblers.
And then as time went on and I got more proficient and mechanically adept and I looked like a strip dealer,
right,
I could go into the Sands and the Desert Inn and Caesars and take a shot. And you know, the term juice means you know someone, you've got juice.
Sure.
You could walk in and get a job. I didn't have any juice. I was out of the military.
Right.
But luckily, time came where a guy that knew an uncle of mine bought the Tropicana real estate. So I went into the Tropicana, asked for Fred Domeney on the old style paging phones, and the operator would call. You don't even hear that anymore.
No, in the hall, right, and down in the main lobby, there'd be paging phones. I don't have that anymore.
My book, Tenacity, describes the whole starting out in business in dealing, which was a business. You're in business for yourself. If you have a personality, you're making better tips, and that's your quality of life. It's how I ended up asking the girl I was dating to marry me. We ended up having three children. We bought new cars when we could. I had car payments. I ended up having a house payment, and the dealing job paid all those bills, but there was nothing extra.
Right.
And I wanted more out of life,
right,
which I think goes to that entrepreneurial spirit.
Right. One but obviously you could see the tenacity is like kind of part of your personality. I mean, some of it's learned, right? People can read your book and learn to be more tenacious consciously, but I think it sounds like some of it was ingrained in the way that you were. I don't know if that was your military training or what attracted you to the military, but even if you're dealing, you're just going to be better at what you do to make more money and have more opportunity, right?
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And by dealing at night, it opened up my days to earn extra income, which I ended up doing when I maxed out my income. And dealing at the Tropicana was a great job, don't get me wrong, but I wanted more things in life. I wanted to provide for my family. So I got a real estate job selling real estate. I got a real estate license.
Yeah.
And then I sold homes. Mm-hmm. And businesses back then, it wasn't specialized where you either did business or homes.
Right.
If you were a realtor, you could sell anything.
Okay.
And that's what I did. And at the Tropicana, I was known as the realtor by day and the dealer by night. And people would come to me, cocktail waitresses, dealers, shift bosses, to help them find or sell a home or find a business. Well, a Cuban fellow dealer, and I say Cuban because most dealers of roulette back then were Cuban. When Castro took over the nation of Cuba, he closed all the casinos. And unlike Las Vegas, where you'll see a row of 20 blackjack tables with a roulette table at the end of the row, in Cuba, I'm told, there was a row of roulette wheels with one blackjack table at the end of the row.
The roulette was real big.
It was a more popular game for the Hispanic community.
Got it.
So Jose Martinez and I were friends. We worked together. We both dealt roulette. And Jose one day asked me to sell an investment home for him. At the same time,
like a rental, like a two-family home or something like that.
It was a duplex rental.
Got it. Okay.
So I listed it, got it sold. And around the same time, my shift boss asked me to find him a bar to buy because his daughter was a bartender. And he wanted to invest in a bar. She could run it. And he'd enjoy the profits of the owner and help his daughter grow from a bartender to a bar manager. So I told Danny, let me check around. Well, there was a tavern on my way home from work at the Tropicana that I would stop at 3 a.m, have a cocktail, unwind, meet a couple of other dealers, and then go home and go to sleep. I liked this place. I liked hanging out there. I liked the feel of it.
Right.
And its name was the Suburban Lounge. And when Danny Colleran asked me to find him a bar to buy, I went in one day and met the owner of the Suburban, asked him if he'd sell. He told me he wasn't interested in a listing because a lot of realtors were approaching him to list. I said, I don't need a listing. I have a buyer.
Right.
Would you sell? What would the terms be? And he said, yes, I would for these terms. Well, Danny Colleran said, the Suburban Lounge out on Spring Mountain Road, they still ride horses out there. No, I want something in the middle of the valley. And I said, okay, I'll keep looking. But this suburban lounge, since I would go there once in a while during the week, piqued my interest enough that I knew what Chuck wanted to sell it, what he wanted down, what he would carry.
Right.
And that entrepreneurial spirit kicked in.
Yeah, you're thinking, I could do this, right?
I want to figure out a way to make it happen.
Right.
But I didn't have the down payment.
Right.
Well, ironically, the money Jose Martinez was netting from his duplex sale was almost to the dollar what Chuck wanted to sell the suburban lounge. And he would carry the balance of about $115,000 in a note, which I thought, if I run the bar well, I can pay the note and hopefully make a living.
Yeah.
I go to Jose with his closing papers and check and said, what are you going to do with these proceeds? He says, I don't know. I'm just going to stick it in the bank. I said, I'd like to borrow it. A bank will give you 5 or 6% interest. I'll offer you 12. He said, what are you going to do with the money? I said, I want to buy this business that I'm going to keep dealing, but I want to run this business separately.
Yeah.
Jose signed the check over to me. I said, Jose, I thought I'd give you a second on my home, some security. And I mean, I'm honored that he said, Ron, when other dealers run down to the break room and they're playing gin rummy for money, you always go down. And I notice you're always reading, you're studying for a test.
Right,
I think you're going to do something with your life. I believe in you. I know you're going to pay me back. I don't even need a note.
So you basically did it on a handshake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what? I did the note anyway in case something happened.
Of course, because you want to protect his interests and you care about him. You appreciate him.
My estate would do the right thing by him.
Yeah, exactly.
And a buddy of mine in the Marine Corps that I met, Dan Hughes, moved to Vegas with me. We got discharged at the same time. We were roommates before I married Joan. And I asked Dan if he wanted to partner with me because up to that point, Dan and I were buddies in the Marines. We did everything together. We rented an apartment together.
Right.
So at the time, Dan was a 1/3 partner. I took 2/3 of it, but I would run the bar and we bought the suburban lounge. Now, the book Tenacity goes into much greater detail about how that happened.
Right. But that's kind of where it started. Right. That was the beginning of. But, you know, it gets down to some things that I see as a common thread. First of all, networking, right? You put it out there. People knew who you were. You were a mover and a shaker, and you built a network of people to make these things happen, to sell a business, to buy a business, to do real estate. And then you were creative enough to say, wait a second, my friend's selling his property. I need money to buy this business. I think it's a good opportunity. I don't know what my friend's going to do with his money. You find out he's not going to earn much with it sitting in the bank. He's got faith in you. You approach him. I mean, you could have said, hey, you want to partner with me and run this business? He might say, no, I don't want to do that. But instead, you borrow. I assume you've paid him off, right? It's all been paid
him
back
off every month, right on time. And he appreciated that. He had nice cash flow for about 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
And the payment ended up being nothing. Now, bear in mind, the tavern business back in 1979 wasn't like it is today.
No.
Video poker had not been invented. And in fact, my book describes how video gaming came about because Dan was in screen printing when he got out of the Marines. And he actually worked with the guy who invented video poker. The guy was a slot salesman at Bally's who worked with Dan. Cy Red is his name. He started a company called Fortune Coin when Bally's said, people don't want interactive gaming. They want to pull a handle on a slot machine.
Right.
All the real gambling is on the table games.
Yeah.
So Cy Red said, well, I developed this on your dime, so proprietarily it's yours. Are you saying it's mine? I can do what I want with it? And the big shots at Bally's giggled at him and said, yeah.
They didn't care. They were stupid, right? But it's basically a computer, right? I mean, it's a computer instead of having these wheels and all the mechanical stuff, and it just runs as a video machine, a poker machine.
And it's interactive gaming, which no one had heard of before.
Right.
Cy Red was a man of great vision. He opened Fortune Coin, which your people will recognize today, is known as IGT.
Sure.
International Gaming Technology.
Yeah.
He started that.
Wow.
And that was the advent of interactive gaming. Now you walk through a casino, maybe 5 or 10% are pull handle slots.
Right.
All the rest are big LED screens.
Buttons. And, yeah.
Interactive gaming of some kind.
Yeah.
Well, what I was saying was in the early days, taverns, you just sold drinks. The suburban.
Right. They didn't have machines in the taverns
and
stuff. Right.
They had one or two old style black screen slot machines in the corner, which the locals didn't even play.
Right.
And you had to make your money selling drinks. So going to what you said about a good entrepreneur is good at networking.
Yeah.
The networking not only opened the door to give me the gumption to ask Jose to loan me the money to buy the bar.
Right.
But all the dealers I worked with at the Trop were excited that one of their own was taking a shot to get out of the racket.
Yeah,
and every night when the waitresses, bartenders, and dealers got off, they would five or
go
ten
to
of
your
them
place.
Come up to the Suburban to give me a little shot in the arm when all you could do is sell someone three or four drinks. You weren't making money in any other way.
Right.
So over time, I saw I was losing customers. And this is another thing that goes to the entrepreneurial spirit. Observe, identify things you could do better, implement.
Yeah. Right.
I was losing people because they wanted to go eat. We didn't have a kitchen. I had frozen pizzas in a toaster oven and a popcorn machine.
Yeah.
So I borrowed money from an aunt in Pennsylvania to put in a small kitchen and did nothing. I wasn't a cook, but I could cook a burger. I could deep fry French fries and I could make a salad.
And it was enough that if they wanted to come for a drink and they were hungry, they didn't have to leave.
They got real food.
Right.
And Dan and I parlayed that first bar and the kitchen we added into four locations, two with non-restricted gaming licenses, full-fledged casinos. And we grew that concept into a diversity of businesses. Dan's screen printing capability at Valley Slot Machines. We opened the company when gaming started to spread after Cyred came out with video poker and many more people got into gaming machine production. Dan thought we ought to open a screen printing business to print glass for all these other manufacturers. They're making machines, but they don't want to build the cabinets and print the glass.
So IGT was a technology company. Were they outsourcing their building the box for the machine?
They built all their machines from the ground up.
Okay.
We ended up getting $100,000 a month in work from them because the sale of their machines outperformed their capability to manufacture. So we got overflow work.
So they want to outsource some of it, right?
But there were manufacturers of machines around the world that popped up after that.
Yeah.
And all they did was the computer chips and the concept. And they needed a company like
They didn't want to open a factory to screen print glass and to put these things together. It's a big manufacturing job. Okay.
So we grew that from me and Dan and two people that we hired and an SBA loan of $100,000 into a 120 person company, worldwide sales of over $12 million a year.
Nice.
And that was yet another business my book describes the inception of, from concept to reality. And after 20 years, we sold it for several million dollars and moved on.
Now, let me ask you a question, and I know you're going to get into this more. But so obviously the tavern business is a very different kind of business than the manufacturing business, right? So what did you learn? What did you think you learned from running a tavern and being your business owner there that you carried over? And how is it different than the first business?
I use an old term called OJT. That was a term when I was young that was commonly known, on-the-job training.
Yeah, well, that's very common.
Formal education.
Right.
But Dan and I applied good, honest instincts. Treat your people well. Treat your customers honestly. Be a man of your word. Customers will not only come back, but they'll refer you.
Right.
Dan's skill in screen printing made sure we put out a good product.
Right.
Treating customers and employees well made sure we would enhance the likelihood of success and let the numbers take care of themselves. Don't sweat the small stuff.
Right. But just it was clearly a different skill, right? Because now you're running a company with 125 employees. That's different than managing a tavern with a bartender and maybe a cocktail waitress, right?
You know, Mitch, we brought in a gal out of high school that impressed us at her interview. She became our receptionist. She ended up going to college after work, became a CPA, and ultimately became our chief financial officer.
Nice story.
Jennifer Tarter ended up growing with us from the ground up into what we later became.
Right.
When you can identify good people within your organization and give them an opportunity to grow, they don't cost you more money. They make you
more. Of course, they're an investment. Now, that's hard to do, right? That's a learned skill of picking the right kind of people and having faith, and not only having faith, but supporting them in the right way, right? So you said her name was Jennifer? In the wrong environment, she might not have risen to where she is. But in the right environment, with a supportive boss and a supportive team, she was able to be. I mean, that's a great story, to become the CFO of the company. And I assume she made some money when you got sold. When you guys sold out too,
we gave her a profit sharing plan, so everybody made money as nice. We made profits quarterly, and as we sold the company, we took care of our key people. And I mean, that's just an example of where Dan applied what he learned working for Bally's, managing the screen printing shop, and applied those things to our own business. Yeah. What I learned in interviewing and hiring and managing bartenders and dealing with customers, whether they were sober or drunk, helped me learn how to better interact with people. The bar business was a tough racket when people would come in and slam down a dozen drinks.
Right.
DUI enforcement wasn't what it is today.
No.
You would see back then cops would pull over a drunk and give him a ride home or call him a cab. It was a different time.
Yeah, so the rules were different too. The laws weren't as strict.
Like an inappropriate businessman, right. I would serve someone a dozen drinks.
Right.
It was just a different time.
It was a different time, yeah.
You run your business based on what the market is.
Right.
And we ran a very successful bar, which grew into four bars, two full casinos, and then parlayed it not only into Suburban Graphics, but as I said earlier, I ended up opening 20 different businesses, some with Dan, some he felt his plate was full. I did it myself, like Presidential Limousine Service, which I opened the limo company in the 80s.
Right.
Because I identified a need. You find a niche.
You're in Vegas, for God's sake, right?
Well, you know what? There were only about six stretch limos in Vegas back in 1984.
Six stretch limo companies or six stretch limos?
Limos at one company. The other company didn't have stretches. I thought there was a market in stretches. No. So you find a niche. You think you could do it better.
Right.
I went to California. I researched a couple of successful companies there. In fact, in San Diego, I used a company called Presidential. When I got back to Vegas, I found no one was using the name in Nevada. So I opened the limo company, called it Presidential. We only had stretch limos, not formal airport limos.
Got it.
I put my drivers in tuxedos. I greeted customers with a single stem rose for each female in the group. And instead of a wooden bar in the back that had nothing on it, like my competitor, I stocked the bar because I had bars on all sides of town.
Right.
My driver could go in, stock the ice bucket.
Right. Well, it was a combination, but it just made sense to you, right? To do the customer things, to make people have a special experience. They're in Vegas.
Right.
They're not there for some other reason, right? They're in there to have an experience. I also like something about you, Ron, and that is you seem to identify the right kind of people that you want to go into business with. So you didn't say, all right, well, we're going to do this screen printing stuff and go out and figure out how to print on glass. You brought in a partner who you trusted, who knew that side of the business, and you're putting the right people in place to not say, I want to do it all on my own. Some of the things you're doing on your own, but I'm sure you had a lot of people along the way that helped you become successful, right?
You're exactly right. Not only was Dan a loyal friend and partner in the Marine Corps,
yeah,
where you count on the other guy to keep you alive, but he was a trusted friend. When we bought homes, we each bought two homes side by side. They were attached by a common wall. It was a $32,000 home. It's all we could afford at the time in 1975. But we were friends.
I bought a lot of house in 1975, though, right?
It was a 1,200 square foot home.
Okay.
It was good enough to start a family in.
Right.
And Dan had the home next door. So we were friends and buddies. And you know what? For all the businesses we got into together, we never wrote up a partnership agreement. There was trust. Dan, what we thought was fair was because I was running the bars, I did 2/3 of the bars. And Dan was a passive partner who would help me when he could based on his work schedule. And when he opened Suburban Graphics, we agreed that he'd be 2/3 of that because he was going to run that. Now, as we grew into the limo company and some other ventures, we just one day, without any formula, no accountant, we said, you know what? It's really complicated deciding who's a third of this, who's 2/3 of that. And one day we said, okay, as of January 1st, everything's 50-50. It may have made no sense in dollars, but we had a friendship and a partnership that just was the thing to do, and we did it. And to this day, we have never created a written document for the partnership.
Right. And by the way, for people listening, that's not something I'd recommend for people. It doesn't always work out. You need to have agreements. And a lot of reason why you need agreements sometimes, and this didn't happen to you, is what happens if you died and then Dan had to deal with your family and your family had a different idea of what you had intended to do. And, you know, it's more if you're not there or you're not capable of.
You're right.
Yeah, that's right.
And here's how we dealt with it. when we realized if we were only doing this because of our love for one another and right. our trust in one another. And if one of us died unexpectedly, neither wanted the other to have to live with the estate. So we bought an insurance policy, and the insurance advisor said, this will be part of a buy-sell agreement.
Right.
When one partner dies, his life insurance will be used by his family to buy out his interest in the business.
Right.
And the surviving partner will own 100% of it.
That's a great way to do it.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's L-A-W to 21000 to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
Yeah, so that was a solution to the problem. While we didn't have a partnership agreement, we went into a buy-sell agreement that was for insurance purposes. And
yeah.
Thankfully, neither of us predeceased the other. And we ended up selling all our businesses at great profits. For many years, we kept the real estate under some of them. We were the landlords to the buyer of the business.
Okay.
Until the buyer of the business opted to buy the real estate, we negotiated a deal, and that worked out very well for us. In fact, today, we still own the real estate under one of the casinos, and we're 50-50 partners in it.
Got it. So you've pretty much divested yourself of all the businesses. You don't run businesses anymore. What were some of the other businesses that you've grew and sold?
I got into the car dealership business with a friend from Texas.
Okay.
My business partner in that is a great guy named Don Tamburo, who I met socially in Las Vegas through a lounge singer that I enjoyed going to hear at Caesar's Palace, who told me about a customer that flew to town on his own jet every 3 months, quarterly, with his managers that performed the best out of his multiple dealerships. And this lounge singer, Andrew James, said, "You've got to meet this guy, Don Tamburo." I met Don at Caesar's in the Galleria Lounge one night. We became fast friends. And years later, when I was diagnosed with esophageal cancer, I called my dear friends and said, "Look, this cancer has an 8% survival rate. I may not survive surgery. I just want to say goodbye. And I've loved being your friend." And what does Don do from Texas? He sends his jet to fly me from Vegas to Burbank for my surgery at USC Hospital.
Wow.
I mean, that's a good friend.
Yeah.
And obviously I survived the surgery. I beat the odds. And Don ended up moving to Vegas after selling his dealerships in other states, moved to Las Vegas. And as a retired ex-car dealer,
he said
to me one day, "You know, I don't think I'm ready to not do anything else. What do you think about doing it again?" And I said, "You know, I'd love to do something with you." And we bought a car dealership, which we parlayed into 3 car dealerships in Las Vegas and 3 in California. And we grew those businesses as partners until we subsequently sold them to another operator. And we still own one in Las Vegas where we're the landlords of, not the operators of.
So you own the land or the building and you're leasing it out to the dealership.
Yeah, there's a guy that bought that Kia dealership, and he pays us rent every month.
And you sold the limo company, right? You don't have that anymore.
Sold Presidential.
Got it.
And I've at this point, I've sold all the businesses and I'm only a shareholder investor in a couple of things currently, and I own the property where I collect rent. And as I told you earlier, when you mentioned the recent visit yourself to the Bellagio, that I enjoy competitive cash poker games, and that's where I'm headed after this interview.
Very nice, very nice. Okay, so now you're coaching people too, along with the book?
Well, I don't coach other business owners? Yeah, I don't coach people as a business,
right.
But many people that I encounter socially are thinking about starting up something, and they will want to meet with me and talk about something and get some advice. And I should probably charge for it, but I don't. In fact, there's a company, Ameriprise Financial, is a national company.
Yeah.
And they reached out to me to speak to their annual dinner in October and asked me what my appearance fee would be. And I said,
you definitely should be charging them.
Well, I was
benefiting from
their HR director by a neighbor.
Right.
And I said, as a courtesy to Brandon, I'm not going to charge you, but how about if you just buy a book for every one of your 70 investment advisors and the 2 to 4 guests that they bring who are their top clients. And I think just by it wasn't going to change my life to get $10,000 or $20,000 from them.
No, I understand that, but
and I didn't want to outprice myself. I didn't know what the market would be.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to giving a 1-hour speech more than possibly passing on an appearance fee. And who knows what may come from that.
Right. Well, it's funny because you probably should be charging for that. I deal with a lot of coaches and I interview a lot of people that are out there coaching, and they've been successful. They've sold a couple of businesses. I mean, you've been involved in like 20 businesses, and they're not like all related. I mean, I guess a little bit they're kind of related because you went from one opportunity to another seeing things. But, the limousine company, the car dealership, it's not related to the tavern ownership. The tavern ownership, I understand because the poker machines, and you were in Vegas and where that came from. But, you just have a knack for transferring your business skills from one opportunity you're running to another opportunity. And I think that a lot of those skills can be learned. I'm not saying that some of it isn't innate. It is, but it certainly, you can improve people's chances of success. And I think they should certainly, pay you for that.
My book describes me as a niche finder or an observational.
That's what it looks, sounds entrepreneur. Like, yeah.
And Mitch, I might take your advice and start up something new where I am selling that advice. And there's been one occasion where a company that was based in Louisiana wanted to get into the Las Vegas tavern business because gaming is involved.
Yeah.
And my gaming attorney was referring them to me. And to spend one afternoon with me, I charged them $10,000 and took them around town, showed them a couple of locations that were failing, some that were successful, and gave them my thoughts on what made the successful ones do well and what pitfalls to avoid. And they've done very well since, maybe not as a result of my time with them, but nonetheless, they did very well. And I might consider...
Well, you're going to speak to Ameriprise. There's going to be 70 agents there with clients, some of which own businesses, looking to get into businesses, want to be mentored, need a coach. You and I both know that the best performers use coaches and advisors, and right?
Yeah.
There's probably going to be business comes out of that if you pitch it right,
Very good idea. And it's intriguing for me to think that here I am retired at 69 years of age and I'm financially settled.
Right.
But this might be a good thing to get into where I could pick my schedule and take on the tasks that come.
Also people will be more selective, be more appreciative of your advice. It doesn't have to be that you charge them. Look, I understand the company's coming in looking to open tavern, so you charge them $10,000 a day. It's an investment for them. For other people, maybe that's too steep. But, paying you $2,500, $3,500 for a day or for 6 hours or whatever types it be, you should definitely benefit. And I think it improves the perception of the value of what you're bringing them, because obviously it's very valuable. I mean, you can't replace 30, 40, 50 years of business experience unless they live it themselves. So let's go to the book. So where did that start coming from? Somebody said, hey, Ron, this is a great story. You're going to write a book, and probably nagging you about it for years.
It actually came from boredom. I sold the car dealerships in 2015, and I had to decide what to do with the rest of my life. I didn't enjoy just being retired. And I didn't want to play poker every day.
Yeah,
I've got three sons and I've got five grandsons.
Nice.
So I spend some time with family. They come over, we'll play pool.
Right. But how much can you do, right? You have the itch. You want to get back and do stuff.
So I was speaking over a dinner with someone who had written a couple of books, and he suggested I tell my story in a book as something to do. And lo and behold, that actually took a couple of years to do, to research and hire the right people to do the editing and make the book happen. And interestingly, you know, the not only starting 20 businesses, but some of your viewers may be intrigued by the challenges I found, because as we said earlier, what is unavoidable is there will be challenges. You just don't know what they are. And the measure of a man is how he deals with those challenges, not to cut and run,
sure,
to deal with them head on and how to defeat them. Well, I had a corrupt city councilman that was a competitor of mine in the businesses I was trying. Yeah, city councilmen here are part-timers.
Okay,
so he was a businessman. He had a screen printing shop. He competed with us at Suburban Graphics, and he was going into the gaming tavern business. He used his power as a councilman to do away with me as a competitor, or he tried to, by trumping up criminal charges and using his small town police department to come after me. That's and my book talks about how that developed and how I faced those challenges and overcame them. So there's a lot of angles to the book Tenacity that your viewers might find helpful or motivational in their pursuit of going into business themselves, and get the feeling to not let failure be an option, and don't be defeated no matter how big the giant opponent is you face.
Yeah.
But sometimes David does beat Goliath, and I think they could learn some things from my book.
For sure. Also, well, I think it's also, look, it's another example of, you said, okay, I'm going to write a book. I'm not going to do it alone. So people, a lot of people think, oh, they got to write a book. They don't know how to write a book. There are people out there that can help you. You need an editor. You need somebody to help you put it together. I'm working on a book right now, and I'm not a terrible writer. I mean, that's what I do for a living, but I don't, it's hard to tell your own story. So we're putting together this book. It's not my story. It's a primer for business owners and so forth. So I'm bringing in certain professionals that cover different areas of law. I'm just interviewing them on Zoom. We're having it transcribed. I'm sending it to my partner as a co-author. He's cleaning it up. We're sending it back to the other guy and he's fixing it. And it makes it, you know, much easier to do. So there are definitely ways to get a book out that could be a good calling card and a good resource to people to hear your story and to learn from, like I said, a lifetime of experience that you've had.
Yeah, I certainly get that. You know, the battles with this councilman not only had me facing off a police department that was corrupt and a police captain that was corrupt.
Yeah.
But through the use of an undercover investigator I hired, and some of the creative ways I felt I needed to employ to defend myself. The book has a lot of angles. In a couple of defeats we had at city council level, I took them to the Supreme Court and prevailed, not only in the tavern realm, but in the presidential realm. So there's much more detail in Tenacity about that. And also, many of your viewers who enjoy books but only enjoy them in audible form might be interested that when I learned that 25% of all books sold today are sold in audio form only.
Yeah, I listen to a lot of books,
I want to make my audiobook stand out, so probably that same entrepreneurial spirit that I was in, that was ingrained in me, I decided to hire a familiar voice, and I did a search for actors that had interestingly different voices, and I ended up having my PR people track down Michael Madsen, the actor from Reservoir Dogs and Donnie Brasco.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up striking a deal with him to bring him to town for a week, set him up in a sound stage. And over the course of about 40 hours of recording, he recorded what's now a 9.5-hour audiobook.
Nice.
And it's my story is told by Michael Madsen for people that download the book on Audible.
Nice. Well, I will definitely check it out. I think that that you're doing all the right things, and you know, you're obviously passionate about everything that you do, including the book. And it's true. I listen to a lot of stuff because I'm always reading contracts. I'm doing that kind of stuff during the day. So sometimes on the way home or at night or whatever, I like to listen, you know, as opposed to read things all the time. It's just, you know, my eyes start to hurt. But what are some of the lessons learned if you were going to share? I know you've shared some of them here today. For a business owner, what are kind of the lessons that you would share, two or three things that you think are good advice for somebody either get starting in business or looking to improve what they're doing, based on your experience and stuff?
Well, clearly persistence or tenacity is the primary objective if you're going to succeed, because inescapable is hurdles and challenges. They're going to
always
come.
It's just part of life, right?
Yeah. So don't turn tail and run. Figure out what the problem is, who's creating the problem, or what is the problem, and how best to circumvent it.
Right.
Two, surround yourself with good people. I don't think I could have done what I did without a good partner and without some of the good staff, like my personal assistant, another Jennifer Medeiros. Jennifer has been with me over 20 years. My original assistant, Roxanne, who was the wife of my private investigator. Those assistants helped keep me on task, make sure I didn't make mistakes or miss meetings that were critical to my continuing success. So surround yourself with good people, trustworthy people, a good partner, and demonstrate a level of tenacity, if you will, or persistence, where you don't let the obstacles that are sure to come defeat you. And success will not be guaranteed, but it will be more likely assured if you demonstrate those traits.
Now, you think you were just good at picking people, or you know, because I know some people have trouble, and they can get help to do this, of evaluating who should be part of their team and who's not. And that's always a common problem with businesses, picking the wrong people. And it sounds to me like you picked the right people. So how would you say you went about doing it?
I don't know that it's a skill that you can learn in school.
Right.
I just think through the Marine Corps and through being in business here in Vegas and in interacting with customers and dealers in the dealing business, I just feel like I developed a skill set for if I interviewed 20 bartenders for an opening, my gut would tell me if this guy or gal was the right one for the job.
Yeah.
And by questioning them with scenarios, how would you deal with this? How would you deal with that?
Right.
And how they responded to me. I would pick the right people that ultimately, I mean, you certainly make some wrong calls, but for the most part,
of course,
you make
try to avoid them. Yeah.
Whether it's in the people that surrounded me as employees of mine, trusted assistants or a business partner or business partners or the ground level employees in the various businesses I was in the car dealership business, the graphics business, the wholesale glass and mirror business, the limo business, tavern industry, picking people that you felt you had a synergy with that would do their jobs the way you would do it yourself if you were in their shoes is a skill set that people will develop over time and will help them achieve, I'd like to think, unbelievable success that I've enjoyed.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good comment, because you mentioned about, you know, you had a gut feeling, but you didn't really. You had a gut feeling because you asked the right questions. A lot of people just, they go with their gut and they don't really, they just get a feeling from this person and they don't really ask the right questions. Okay, well, how would you deal with this situation? How would you deal with that? What have you done this to kind of narrow down the people? And then when you do it right, like you did, and you bring the right people in. I mean, obviously Jennifer was the right person if she became the CFO of your company eventually. Clearly, over time that showed itself.
Or they make the mistake of delegating too much.
Yeah.
You know, when you become the owner, don't get so filled in your head with your title.
Right.
Some things you should stay hands-on. And even though I had managers in all of my businesses, if an employee was being hired for a key position, I would want to meet that person too. Let the manager, you know, don't pull the ground out from under your manager. Let them interview them. But interview them yourself as the owner.
Yeah.
And don't feel like you're too big or too important to do the things that made you successful. So my offer of advice to people is don't delegate too much.
Right.
Keep your fingers in the pie and get a feel for the things, especially the people that are going to be in a key position.
That's good advice, because I think some people do delegate too much and some people don't delegate at all. So we know that there's a balance between you shouldn't be doing $10 an hour work, but if it comes to evaluating really important people in your organization, there's a reason that you're successful and that you've gotten to where you are. And that doesn't mean that your manager, even though they're good at what they do, have those skills. So you need an extra check, I think, to evaluate that. And look, there's a lot of places that people stumble along with businesses. And I'm sure, you know, like, for example, this is what I was going to ask you next. What are some of the things that you feel looking back that maybe you did wrong, that you would do differently, or that you did differently because you learned along the way? Because we do learn a lot from our mistakes and our we take wrong turns, we trip up a little bit, and we learn from those things. So what were a couple of things that come to mind?
Well, the book says in one chapter, while the past few chapters looks like I hit a home run every time, that's not the case. And Dan and I were, we had some real estate down the street from our printing company. It was a vacant lot. And we thought bungee jumping might be something to get into because it was growing.
It must have been a big lot.
Yeah, it was a good sized lot. We built a 280-foot tower crane.
Okay.
We were the tallest jump on the West Coast. And it was a good idea in theory. And bungee jumping was occurring in two other locations, but they were 140-foot jumps. Ours was a 280 tower with a 240-foot jump. In theory, it all sounded great.
Right.
We no sooner spent $500,000 getting it opened, and there were these accidents across the country that just gutted the industry.
Yeah, because you probably couldn't get insurance at that point, right? People are like, forget it.
The price, you could always get things just that the price goes up.
Price went up, right?
You lost your market.
Yeah.
You know, people would see these accidents on the nightly news and say, oh, I thought bungee jumping was safe. It's not. I'm not going to do it. Well, every one of those three accidents were parking lot temporary cranes with cords.
People don't realize that because the news doesn't report that there was a reason that those things failed that might not have, but it doesn't matter, right? Perception is reality.
I put out news releases, look for proof of licensure by the city as an amusement ride. Look for proof of insurance, which we had each of them framed by the window where you would sign the releases. Look for a permanent structure, not a crane on wheels.
Right.
And then enjoy the sport in a safe way. We bought our cords custom made for our jump heights. We had a short height, which the crane would lift you to one height or a higher height. And we had cords specifically made for those heights that cost us $15,000 per cord.
Right.
We didn't buy cords at a sports place and tie them together. And when you saw people falling and they said, oh, look, the cords do break. They didn't break. It was a bad connection.
Right.
But I just couldn't get the word out. And Dan and I, you know, we were lucky with a lot of great investments that made terrific money. But that was one of the failures that happened. But I don't regret. You know, you got to take shots.
Yeah, you never hit home runs every time. Babe Ruth struck out a lot of times.
My chapter says that.
Yeah.
You don't hit a home run every time, but don't be disenchanted by your failures. Keep swinging the bat or you're never going to hit the ball.
Absolutely. Well, I think that people can... I mean, I'm not saying that you should fail 20 times and become successful once, but, you know, obviously there's always things that you try and, you know, they don't work. And as you're more successful, you have a little bit more staying power to take those risks and to absorb the those, we'll call them challenges, we'll call them law. I never think that people fail. I think that when something doesn't work, you learn a lot about what you wouldn't do. Like, for example, just because it was the bungee jumping business doesn't mean you learned a lot about media and perception and how it can affect other business. I mean, look, something can happen in the bar business, right? Where some guy drives home and wraps himself around a tree and dies. And then there's all kinds of regulations, but it might have nothing to do with your bar. Maybe you don't serve, you're careful. You do all the right things for people, but people like, well, taverns and it's a liability, you know?
When the bad luck you encounter wasn't at your doing, like I didn't make those accidents happen.
Right.
It happened to me.
Right.
Well, then you can look back and say, I did this wrong and that's why I failed, which lets you hold your head up high. I mean, you talk about the taverns. There's a police friend of mine who was doing an undercover weed and sting operation with a drug dealer. And he thought he was doing me a favor when they were going to take the guy down. They had to pick a location. He and the FBI were on a joint task force taking down this big drug dealer. He picked my parking lot. His reason was, after we take the guy down, we'll go into Ron's bar and spend some money there. Well, the takedown went badly.
And it went, it did?
My parking lot was on the nightly news from my surveillance cameras where
it's not true there's no bad publicity. There is.
Well, it made my place look like it might be a drug den.
Right, of course.
Randomly picked my parking lot. And I did a press release to all three major networks and said, you're making it look like my place is a problem. My parking lot was used without my permission. Just change what your ad is saying in your news article. But it fell on deaf ears.
So was the guy patronizing your bar and they followed him there? No, they actually brought him there to take him down?
They did drive-bys with him around town and they were going to do this last big drug buy and arrest them. So they said, meet us in the back parking lot of the Castaways.
Oh.
They didn't even come in my place. He never came in my place. They picked it, and Randy thought, it, you know, we'd bring 20 agents into his bar and had, give him a shot in the arm. It was with all the love and good spirits in mind. But
and it went bad.
It just went badly. The guy pulled out. The cars that closed in on him didn't close in tight enough. He hit two agents. He hit the corners of the cars. And there was a manhunt for him for 3 days, which was the opening story on every news station.
Right. This is where he started.
Drug buy that went down badly at the Castaways.
That is
and
very
I wrote
funny.
To them and said, it wasn't at the Castaways. It was in my parking lot.
Right. We had nothing to do with it.
Anyway, we had a slump in business for a few months, but
it bounced back.
Oh, we did. Yeah, it was bad publicity. But, you know, things are going to happen to you, and you can't do anything about it. Just keep your nose to the grindstone, run your business right, reinforce your people. You know, don't have a mass exodus of employees because they're fearful you're going to go out of business. Be positive, be motivational, inspirational. And you know, if you have a good product at the right price, you'll overcome it. And those are just two examples of bad luck I encountered.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's still a local gaming tavern. And I lease it out to someone else now, and those days are long gone.
Yeah. Well, I think tenacity, perseverance, resilience, I think a lot of that stuff is easier if you recognize and you accept the fact that there's going to be bumps along the road. I don't know what they're going to be, but when they happen, you're just like, well, this is what I don't know what it was going to be, but I expected something to happen that we'll have to deal with challenges, and that's part of growth. And you find your way through it, right? You didn't just shut the tavern down and say, well, I guess we're out of business. Everybody thinks we're a drug den, so we're closing the doors. You wade your way through it, and 3 or 4 months later, things started changing. People forget.
You book losses for a couple of months and just keep swinging that bat to hit the ball, and the business comes back. People have short memories. And anytime I had the opportunity to clarify, it wasn't in my bar. It was in my parking lot. Right. I would make that point to people. There was a Baccarat boss at Caesar's Palace. I was playing Baccarat at his table. And he said, they told me you're a local. What do you do? And I told him. And he said, my wife and I used to go in there. But when we saw on the news about that drug thing, we never went back. And I said, Bruce, it wasn't in my bar. The cops picked my parking lot. He said, I didn't know that. I didn't get that from the news report. And he became a customer again. So you fix the problems when you have a chance to. Get on with your life. But you know, your listeners who are wannabe entrepreneurs need to definitely go into their endeavors realizing there's going to be obstacles.
Right.
The measure of a successful man is how he faces those challenges and doesn't run from them. And be perseverant, be tenacious, and don't shy away from a fight.
Yeah, I always say it's not how hard you fall, because we all will. It's how high you bounce back that really, and that's all tenacity, right? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. So, Ron, I thank you for taking the time. I know it's early out in Vegas because it's 11 o'clock here, so it's 8 o'clock there.
Yeah.
And they can get the book on Audible. They can get the book on Amazon. I assume it's available for Kindle as well, right?
It's on Kindle. It's in barnesandnoble.com. It's on Amazon.
Perfect.
So mostly they need to spell my name right, because there are a couple of books named Tenacity.
Okay.
My last name is spelled C-O-U-R-Y.
Right.
If they put in the author. Or roncoryauthor.com is the website. Has a lot of gallery of photos they might find enjoyable from my actual photos in my life. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today, Mitch.
Thanks for coming. We'll put links in the show notes to the book and for people to get it and to interact with you. And I appreciate you telling your story. It's a great story and very valuable to everyone that's listening. And thanks for coming on this morning.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
All right, Ron. Thanks.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.